Hello and welcome to Every Other Wednesday. My name is Dylan Bickers and I'm joined as always by my friend and good science boy, Devin Navaratnam. This week we're looking forward to bringing you some good stuff, some funny stuff, and maybe even some feelsy stuff. Buckle your seatbelts and hide your amiibo cause shit's about to get weird. Dig dug.
What?
Headline.
It surprised me. Headline, what?
Headline, Treated Like Trash, ProPublica, by Akira Feldman. The body of a young man lay in the middle of Jerome Avenue beneath the elevated train tracks, the scene lit by a luminous neon blue sign that shuttered above the shuttered El Caribe, I don't speak Spanish, restaurant. A garbage truck sat mid-turn at the otherwise deserted intersection in the Bronx. Emergency medical personnel arrived, record show, and pronounced the young man dead at 5:08 a.m. So, basically, this garbage company in New York ran over a guy and claimed it was a homeless person who had either fallen or jumped in front of the truck. Or tried to grab onto the back to, like, get around easier, fell off and died. He wasn't a homeless guy at all, and they knew exactly who he was because he was a worker they were paying under the books, off the books, under the table.
So they ran him over on purpose?
They ran over him on accident and didn't want to deal with the fact that
they were
illegally employing him. God, I was going to say that they're garbage people, but that's just a really, really bad pun, which I feel is not fitting.
Yeah.
So,
I mean...
I keep wanting to say people are garbage, but
Along the same lines, I'm starting to think that I'm actually more liberal than my liberal parents.
Really?
That just made me think of what capitalism does to people.
Oh, absolutely.
But like, we were watching because we were watching SNL recording from last night. We also saw some of the commercials. I'm like, this is why I haven't watched TV, like live TV, in the last 4 years. It's like everything right now is a political ad.
Yeah.
But there was one commercial. It was like, how to declutterize your home. What are you gonna do with all your stuff? And I was like, that's a question for a late stage capitalist. What are you gonna do with all your stuff? And they like both looked at me and then looked back at the TV. Because like, I mean, I don't know, we're pretty proud capitalists. We have a lot of stuff. Like they're not like, my family's not like hard up for cash. Like, but it's just like, yeah, we're also like ultra liberal and like concerned about like everybody, and it's funny. But that kind of like clarity there between me and them, it's like, oh, well, I guess maybe they don't appreciate that.
Rip. Well, I mean, sometimes it's hard. Like,
right? We're all beneficiaries of capitalism, right? Like, I definitely wouldn't have the things that I have if we didn't live in a I guess I couldn't say that, but
yeah, I mean, I enjoy the things I have, like the nice products that I pay for in a way, but I also have a lot of the problems I have in my life associated with capitalism. And I don't know, it's rough. I don't know. Maybe
you know me. You're a good socialist boy.
Yeah, I mean, the two of us together, we got that socialism unlocked.
So, building our brand in the future, we're a socialist podcast about Vore and memes.
Yes, 100%.
Video games, apparently, because we can go on for hours about video games.
Oh, hell yeah.
We tested in our last episode.
Very true.
So, yeah. Oh, I forgot to definitely talk about God of War in the last episode.
Yeah, you should mention that.
So
a little bit.
I can go into that a little bit because it's still exciting, and I still don't have that game.
Rip.
But I will get it. I'm still working on Ratchet and Clank right now, even though I already know that story. But It's really pretty, and I like the new gameplay and stuff.
Yeah.
New old gameplay. Came out in, what, 2014?
Hell yeah. You gotta get that good, whatchamacallit, I can't think, words are hard, that good, nostalgia going.
Right. And I really like those games because the more you use a weapon, the better the weapon becomes.
Oh, hell
which
yeah.
Which is how it should always work.
Yeah.
And so you get, like, level 5 weapons, and they, like, the name changes, and the, like, the actual, like, art for the weapon changes, which is cool. Mm-hmm. And it just does a bunch of damage, and then, like, even if you build up to level 5, you need to get this stuff called Raritanium to upgrade your weapons. Mm-hmm. And so if you don't have that tree totally filled up, it's not a full weapon yet. But that's enough about Ratchet & Clank. God of War.
Mm-hmm.
Boy! And yes, a lot of boy memes. My favorite being the, there's the pigeon that, like, turns its head. And then, like, shouts. That's a good one.
The seagull?
Turns his head, shout. Yeah, the seagull. Sorry. Turns his head and shouts. Pigeon, seagull. I'm
seagulls.
Not a bird person.
Those big ocean pigeon boys.
The big ocean pigeons is what we call them where I'm from. That one, and then there's also the SpongeBob, where they put the line, like, the Kratos' lines on SpongeBob.
Uh-huh.
And, like, he has his like... palms like outstretched, and then he just points forward and says boy. It's good. But God of War, Kratos is back, he's a daddy. Apparently he got a second wife, and then she dies, and so he's basically a single father now.
Aww.
But he's like in his 50s and doesn't know how to be a dad because he has daddy issues.
Yeah.
His dad is Zeus, apparently, which is canon, even though it's not actually canon in the Greek pantheon, but whatever. It's a journey about him trying to figure out how to become a father. It's also a journey of them trying to take, because what happens, it's not explained, at least it's not explained in the beginning of the game. I watched, like, the first 30 minutes, 40 minutes of it, that he is now in the world of Norse mythology, and has been there for however old his son Atreus is.
Oh, shit.
So he's been there for at least 13 years. So, like, probably 15 years, something like that.
Damn.
And, you know, after killing all of the Greek gods, he kind of went into exile.
Uh-huh.
Self-exile or something.
Yeah.
Because, like, I mean, I guess there's no one else to beat, and he's just like, he might have just become jaded with the whole pantheon, but technically he's the only Greek god, so...
Yeah.
Everybody comes to him now, I guess.
But, RIP.
So, he's been in this world for like 15-ish years, then his second wife dies and he has to raise her son, and his second wife's wish when she died was to be buried at the top of the world, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And so they are on a journey to get to the mountain at the very top of the world and spread her ashes up there.
Oh, shit. So it's very reminiscent of the plot from Far Cry 4.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
I've never played that game.
Basically, you're the son...
Maybe I have, actually. Yes.
Yeah.
But go on.
Yeah, you're the son of this very influential ruler from... it's set in Nepal, I think?
Yeah, it's a Nepalese type country. It's a fictional country.
Yeah. And so you are the prodigal son returning after your mother passed away to spread her ashes on the highest peak there. That's your main quest.
Right.
And along the way, you learn a lot about yourself and become a hero.
Weren't your parents like resistance fighters once like the coup started or whatever, and like the ruling family was ousted, and all that. And they were resistance fighters until it became too dangerous for their family, and then they left.
Yep, yep.
Yeah, yeah. It's cool. Good storylines.
Hell yeah.
So through the new God of War, I guess it's just called God of War, so it's God of War, parentheses, 2018.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically a God of War game, but, you know, we meet all of the Norse people, and all of the Norse gods are like, what the fuck is this Greek god doing here?
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because Kratos knows nothing about Norse mythology.
Mm-hmm.
So he's depending on his son to tell him, what are the weaknesses of these creatures?
Mm-hmm.
Who is this person? You know, what do I need to know about this god in order to interact with him and not piss them off?
Like, yeah.
There's this whole system where Atreus, your son, is like a... he's the scholar of the game, I guess. And
yeah.
He, like, picks up both, like, language fragments and, like, mythology fragments from the world.
Mm-hmm.
He picks up, like, tips. As you keep on fighting monsters, he picks up combat tips that mm-hmm. you can read in his journal
mm-hmm.
That tell you, hey, you know... It's like, he'll say, like, this Draugr does not seem to be affected by Father's axe, but if Father, shield bashes him, maybe his armor falls off or something like that.
Yeah, like, that's something I noticed. Like, I was watching two best friends play do a quick playthrough of the beginning of the game, and the journal was all not only written in, but also voiced by Atreus, and a lot of, like reaching back to things his mother taught him, and there's a lot of references to like all the different things he learned from his mother that he's passing on to his dad, which is I just found that to be a really interesting take on that.
And then there's like a whole tension in their relationship because apparently Kratos was not really there
mm-hmm.
for his son for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And also Kratos doesn't think, at least in the beginning of the game, doesn't think that his son is ready to fight
mm-hmm.
and doesn't think of him as an equal, but as a, you know, as a kid, which I mean he is, but you know, during the journey he's gonna need somebody of equal strength or to recognize his strength in order to complete his journey, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you're not going to grow up right unless you have a little fatherly neglect.
Right. I think that's the message of the game, right? But, you know, it's the Kratos Big Daddy type of... Well, I said Big Daddy. Now that reminds me of Bioshock.
Yeah, you've also referred to, in some way, Kratos as Daddy at least 3 times, so I'm starting to get worried.
I mean, we were talking about, like, the daddyism of, like, video games and how, like, The Last of Us has, like, made, like, such an impact that, like, even though The Last of Us, you aren't the, what's her name?
Ellie?
Yeah. Ellie. You're not her father, mm-hmm. but you are a father figure to her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and that kind of... I mean, it's a good way to frame a story, but it's also getting cliche.
Yeah.
But I hear that gameplay in this game... I mean, if you want to go Bioshock Infinite spoilers, you can also make that a case for Bioshock Infinite.
Bioshock Infinite came out when we were in high school, so I'm pretty sure.
All right, yeah. So if you guys haven't played Bioshock Infinite and still want to play it, whatever. But don't listen to this next like minute. So in that game, you play the characters. I forget everybody's name.
Booker DeWitt, right?
Booker DeWitt. You play Booker DeWitt, who is actually the main bad guy.
Comstock,
but in a separate universe.
Mm-hmm.
And your sidekick is actually your daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Which is...
I forget her name.
I also forget her name. We're terrible video game guys.
Being real bad at being feminist because we just totally went into erasure of this girl.
Right.
We can't remember her name. This
woman.
Yeah,
that's not good. Female erasure.
Elizabeth? Is it Elizabeth?
Yeah. All right. What else do we have to talk about? I think that's enough God of War. I was just going to say, like, the gameplay is supposed to be, like, a mixture of puzzles, platformer puzzles, and, like, good combat, like, combo gameplay.
Yeah.
Which also involves your son in some, like, arrow and stunt stuff. So, like, and apparently there are also side quests in it, and I'm all in for the side quests. So.
Hell yeah. I kind of enjoy, even though the concept of the parental and child, I don't want to say meme, situation is becoming a little bit cliche, but I do like how a lot of these, like, series are rebranding themselves instead of, like, trying to beat a dead horse when it comes to their content. Like,
right.
God of War is a blockbuster title because it's riding off its past success, but if they try to continue with that, like making another installment in the same series, it would have gotten stale.
Right.
So trying to reinvent itself, I think that's actually a really brilliant move on part of the developers. Same thing that I thought with... which I don't think I included in my top five games that I've been playing recently, but it is on my top five of all time list of Resident Evil 7, because even though numerically it's still in the order, they completely just basically burnt down everything they knew about Resident Evil and built it back up from the jump. And they've left enough of the classic Resident Evil gameplay and what made Resident Evil Resident Evil in the game to kind of like flick the nostalgia button, but not so much so that it's like saccharine and annoyingly bad. So I really appreciate that. But yeah, speaking of stuff with... video games and all that, there's some adjacent video game related news in which Justin and Griffin McElroy left Polygon to pursue their podcasting full time, which is super exciting. Maybe we'll get there someday. Except don't know why, but I just thought about Mike Hurley, the owner of the Relay FM network. He sent out a fateful tweet, which was his announcement to the world and all of his followers that he was quitting his job as a marketing director for a bank to be a full-time podcaster. Okay. And so his tweet, which, because you can't edit tweets, obviously, this will remain forever in infamy. It's like, it's official, I'm quitting my job to become a professional podcaster, and...
No. Oh, well. I mean,
but
you can't win them all.
Nah. But big move for the Mackle boys, and actually, you saw them last night in Columbus, so how was that?
I saw them with my cousins, Jeff and Ben. And I tried to get us a shout out because Ben is graduating today. Actually, he just graduated.
Hell yeah! Congrats.
OSU, with a finance degree. So shout out to Ben. But I was trying to get us a shout out from the boys. I'm like, my cousin and me are coming to my brother and me. Like, it would make our lives. Shout us out. And no feedback. But
RIP.
That's fine, because the show was excellent, and it was really funny. There's a munch squad in the episode. No spoilers, but...
I want a munch!
It's pretty good. Yes, the squad was very loud. I want a munch
squad!
I want to... And it's funny, Ben actually told me before the show started, he's like, I actually haven't listened to an episode in like a year. And I was like, oh, okay. So you'll get the bits. It's fine.
It's about to get weird.
It is about to get weird. I don't know. Are we going to create a munch squad like right here on the, because I don't have a story pulled up yet.
Me either.
Without spoiling anything, the before announcement, I think Clint made it.
Before
he made the intro, he said, and the show won't start until the McElroys sufficiently know that the crowd is horny for this one. And like, so just so much like, ah, it was crazy. It was so good. Oh my god, it was one of the nerdiest things I think I've ever done.
Hell yeah.
It was super good. It was held at the Palace last night, Palace Theater in Columbus.
Very nice.
Very nice theater. I think I've been there for, did we see a play there? Or maybe I was with you when we saw it. I don't know. We've done Messiah there.
Yes, that's what it was. We did Messiah, the sing-along.
Yeah, Messiah twice there. Mm-hmm. At least I've done it twice.
Yeah.
Second time, my parents came with, so that was...
Aw.
You know.
Big
good
mood.
It's a good Christmas time thing to do.
Gotta respect and love the Jesus, little baby Jesus.
I was going to say, even though that none of us are devout followers of Jesus Christ, gotta respect the music.
I am taking that Quattro Jew thing to heart. The fact that I found out I am one quarter Jew, thanks to Ancestry.com, I have invested in a Star of David necklace, which has replaced the cross around my neck. So I can be repping my quarter Judaism.
Okay. I mean, saying that you're a Jew and then following up with the word investment is... I'm racist for thinking there's a link there.
Okay.
But it just doesn't feel good.
I don't want to get fucked, okay?
I don't want us to lose our Jewish listeners, okay? Or maybe we're gonna gain more Jewish listeners because you're Jewish now.
I mean
you've always been Jewish, but you figured out that you're Jewish.
Yeah. I mean, we need to beat the Daily Showa on total numbers of listeners and subscribers, because there are way too many people. We either need to go the wholesome route of just bringing my quarter Jewishness out in full, or we can go the cuck route and become the second, actually third, competing with Dubai Friday as the third most anti-Semitic podcast out there. But I'm not super on that.
Oh my god. How many Dubai Friday bits are we gonna like steal?
All of them. Because
this isn't the show. This is actually just us like talking about all of the content we're gonna steal from other content makers.
Oh shit, dog, did you mean to do that one? Because you just pulled out a Turns Out talking about the podcast that founded Turns Out. We got double Turns Out.
So, following up that thought, because we're getting off topic, Justin Griffin left Polygon.com.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that I was very excited for was Griffin's final Amiibo Corner video.
Ah, yes.
Or at least he says it's going to be his final. They say that they're going to still work on some Monster Factory stuff because it's just, you know, they can't quit it now. Once they've opened Pandora's box, they have to see what's, you know,
buried deep inside.
So, Monster Factory, for people who don't know, is a fantastic series about character creations gone wrong in the video games, and they create whole backstories for those characters. What's the name of their not Bart character?
Oh shit!
He's not Bart Simpson, but he is Bart Simpson.
Yeah.
Berth Samson? Something Samson.
Blart Samson.
Blart Samson.
Something like that.
Yep. Blart. Yeah. They had a WWE like Royal Rumble with these characters not so long ago. Like, things are getting weird on Polygon. I mean, things have always been weird on Polygon, but like,
oh yeah,
things were getting real weird on Polygon. But I was also really into the ending episode of Griffin's Amiibo Corner, which for people who don't know, is the reason why our own Dylan Bickers put an Amiibo in his mouth in the last episode, inspired by the various boar acts of one Griffin McElroy, or Griffin McElroy, as we say in my house.
You gotta love the good McElroys.
McElroys, yes, the Mickle boys.
The Mickle boys. Say. That is how we're not gonna get sued, because we're not stealing from the McElroys. We are the Mickle boys.
Right. So the last episode, I mean, I'll leave it a little to the imagination, but it's that two for one, where one of the amiibos, like his actual amiibo that he is going to rate by mouthfeel, mm-hmm. is the anniversary Mario amiibo,
mm-hmm.
With the pixely head and all that.
Lots of sharp corners.
Lots of sharp corners, and he says that his dentist warned him not to do that. And then, so that's the one that he does at the end of the video. But the one in the middle of the video is the Special Toad.
Special Toad,
which is just a very special boy, because that's another series on Polygon.com, which is please retweet. I don't know, have you seen that, Dylan?
I haven't.
It's super good. So Patrick Gill. A side note here. Patrick Gill came up with this video series called Please Retweet, where he tries to get Nintendo and Nintendo of America to retweet a picture of the Good Good Toad, a toad that is wearing a diaper and has hairy man legs. And it's just funny when you see it. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know how else to explain it. And they call it the Good Toad. And aww. He's had like 12 or 13 episodes where he just tries to get them to retweet and gets multiple guests on to ask them to craft tweets in order to for Nintendo to retweet. And they did trick Nintendo into actually tweeting a picture of the Good Toad, just because they put it in a like they put it in like a Polygon promo pic, like out in the corner, like mm-hmm. transparent, so they couldn't see it. But it worked. It happened. but yeah, so yeah, Griffin rates the special toad that some fan made for Polygon.
Mm-hmm.
I think special toad amiibo that some fan made for the Polygon offices. Yeah, he gets put under a spell by Patrick Gill, and that's all I'm gonna say about that.
Yeah, we can't spoil too much.
Can't spoil too much. But yeah, go watch all of the Polygon McElroy stuff.
That's hell out yeah! There.
And celebrate the genius that is Justin Griffin. And do that. Are we gonna talk about Proud Boy?
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about Proud Boy. So in the show notes, we're going to include a video that Devin and I both saw on, I was about separately. To say Tinder, on Twitter. but if a girl took a screenshot of this guy trying to rip this poster on her Tinder profile, I would super like immediately. Yep. But basically, long story short, there's this this proud fascist boy who's trying to destroy a pro LGBT sign that isn't made out of like proper sign material. It's made out of durable sign material.
It's both pro LGBTQ and anti-fascist.
Yes, and so he takes this sign from a demonstrator. And tries to destroy it, and he is completely unable to do so. His T levels were super low. He was not consuming enough of the Alex Jones bone broth, that high tea.
The cardstock is thick with the two C's.
With.
It's super, super thick, and he tries to get other people to help him, and it doesn't work out, and the guy's like, the person he gets to help him is like, I don't know, man, I can't do it.
Yeah, and, like, the fucking demonstrators are cheering him on, like, oh, come on, you can do it, you've been doing big arm work, like, come on, you've almost got it, don't give up.
The person who is taking the cell phone video is actively just nagging him, and, like, you know, like, why is it taking you so long? And, you know, you're right next to this can. Just put it in the trash can. Like, lift the lid, and he's, like, super dumb. He lifts the lid, and then he looks at it, and she goes, no, put it in the trash can. And he goes, no. And then he puts the lid back on and keeps on going. It's super good.
Because apparently folding this thing, so it would technically fit without him lifting the lid. He could just put it in the small hole, because it has become the small sign, the small folded sign. But it doesn't work. And he just has... You can see the gears turning as in one hand he's holding this folded up indestructible sign of LGBTQ rights and anti-fascism, and his actual fascist brain holding the left in the left hand the lid of this trash can, not being able to put the two of those together and put the fucking sign in the trash can. He needs that bone broth. He needs that vitamin B12 liquid form, so his brain cells will... that smooth brain needs to fucking be like a straight manatee. Because did you know manatee brains are, like, perfectly smooth? And Alex Jones sells a product that's supposed to make your brain smoother, which is ridiculous.
No, really?
Yes. What? Because they say it's supposed to get you into this caveman mindset of, like, being, like, alpha and strong, and, like, maxing your T levels. But smooth brains mean you have less actual density of, like, gray matter to hold neurons and memories, and it's bad. You don't want smooth brain. You don't want the caveman.
The reason why the brain, coming from a professional science man, the reason why the brain is bumpy is to maximize surface area, in which you can hold informations and things. But
apparently not the characters of Bioshock Infinite, because neither of us can remember them.
That's true. That's it. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, at least that one with the vagina, we can't remember her name. But the other two we can.
Yeah.
Yeah. Booker DeWitt and Comstock. Yeah. What's her name?
Fucking Liz Taylor.
I mean, that's obviously it. Liz Taylor.
Mary Jane?
Mary Jane. Wait, are you smoking doobies over there? What's going on? Mary Jane?
Rip. No, I can't. Still in the Air Force for now.
Okay. For now.
Listeners, if you cannot see, but I was just dabbing quite furiously, based on the fact that I cannot smoke that good kind bud, because I'm also enlisted.
That also reminds me of a McElroy joke from last night, where audience question, somebody basically says, how do I deal with my middle schooler students? And Griffin just goes, have you tried saying, do you guys know what Fortnite is? And then just doing a bunch of dabs. Yes, very good. But he sounded like Garfield the Deals Warlock when he was doing it.
Yes. Oh my god, I forgot what Garfield the Deals Warlock sounds like. Is it like that super high-pitched voice?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm Garfield the Deals Warlock. Ah.
Yeah.
Welcome to Fantasy Gosco.
Do you guys know what Fortnite is? Basically. I had to get myself pumped up to do that voice. I hope that the listener really felt that in their ear holes.
That's all we're trying to do. I think that's in the description of the website, too.
"We want you to feel us in your ear holes" is a bad description of our of what
it's,
we do.
It's a bad thing.
That's the name. That's the name of the pot. That's the name of the episode. We want
you to feel us in your ear holes.
We're gonna. Yes. We want. We want to be felt in your ear holes.
We want to be felt deep inside your sound box.
Oh.
Content warning. Content warning.
Content warning. TM, 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 TM.
Dig dug, dig dug, dig dug.
Dig. Do. Dig. So, should we talk about how Maggie Haberman, like, epically failed on her take on the White House Correspondents' Dinner?
Yeah, absolutely. Maggie Haberman, reporter for the New York Times, if I'm not mistaken. Yep. And I'm usually super...
I mean, award-winning reporter for the New York Times, by the way.
Pulitzer, Peabody, I'm pretty sure she has both of those. But, like, award-winning journalist for the New York Times. I thoroughly enjoyed reading her takes on things and her reporting. But after the White House Correspondents' Dinner, the comedian Michelle Wolf... as most people who have been on social media or watched the actual event on TV will remember, made some jokes.
Someone watches C-SPAN? Who watches C-SPAN? It was like, what, four people?
Hey, hi.
In the country? You?
I'm one of those four. Or at least I used to be before I stopped paying for cable and switched to Netflix. But,
I wonder if Netflix will syndicate C-SPAN.
I doubt it. They should, but I doubt it. They're gonna lose money.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's the server cost compared to how many people actually watch C-SPAN.
Yeah.
Probably not much. But yeah, go on.
Yes. Michelle Wolf. So Michelle Wolf made some jokes about Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
She made exactly two jokes about Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
Yeah, two. One
people
of
got
very
up,
mad.
Up in arms.
Super mad. And, like, they weren't even bad. One of them was complimenting her on her makeup because she has fantastic smoky eye. And, like, using, what was it, like, the ashes of, like, what was it? What was the joke she made?
It was, yeah, it was something about how burning up the truth and using the ashes of the truth in her eyeshadow. Something like that.
Let's see here.
The other one was... suggesting that she looks like a softball coach or Aunt Lydia from A Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah.
Which is pretty good. Which, I mean, I hadn't seen The Handmaid's Tale before I watched that, but now I get the reference because I've seen it since then.
Oh, yes. I actually really like Sarah. Quote from Wolf. I actually really like Sarah. I think she's resourceful. But she burns facts and then uses that ash to create the perfect smoky eye.
Right.
Like, maybe she's born for it. Born with it. Maybe it's lies. It's probably lies.
Right.
And, like...
Michelle Wolf's set was, like... Not... I mean, I guess it was more raunchy, but I was gonna say... deep, like, more jugular. It felt more like a roast than usual White House correspondence set does.
Yeah.
Which was awesome. Like, I am all for that. On both sides. If they, there is an ultra-liberal president up there, I'm totally down for seeing an ultra-conservative comic take him down.
Oh, absolutely. But, or at least try to. I would love to see Milo Stauffanopoulos try and, like...
Milo Snuffleupagus.
Try and fucking come at Bernie Sanders or Hillary Clinton or Obama. That would have been great.
That would have been great.
Oh, my God.
Okay, so... but, yeah, as we were saying, none of the things that weren't jokes in her set were lies.
Yeah.
And people were still, like, super mad because they thought that she was, like, attacking Sanders as a woman.
Yeah.
Even though, like, the person she was attacking for the most of the night, President Trump, has actually been on a Comedy Central roast. Like, that dude knows how to... receive it as much as he gives it. Like, And that is a quote from me, Devin Navaratnam, co-host of Every Other Wednesday.
Yeah.
He knows how to receive it.
Hell yeah.
As much as he gets it. This is turning into a really horny episode.
It's the horniest. Now, how did the horniness compare? Because I remember listening to a classic Mabim Bam live episode from their second trip to Minneapolis. And I do remember Griffin saying that Minneapolis audiences are the horniest audiences.
Or the horniest.
How do you think Columbus compares to Minneapolis on horniness?
There was a lot of shouting and, you know, like, a lot of, like, shouting for Griffin, at Griffin, like, love me, Griffin kind of things. So, I mean, that's pretty horny, man. Like, there weren't people, like, taking off their underwear and throwing it at the stage, but, like, you know, it was getting hot, and it was physically getting hot in there. Like, the Palace Theater does not have very great air conditioning.
No.
It was getting super hot because it was a sold-out show, so 2,500 of our best boys, and then the best boys.
Aww.
Of our best friends, and the best boys. And then all of the lights and technicians and mics and electronics and stuff. It was hot. Got hot. But, hotness is good for horniness.
Oh, hell yeah.
It made the crowd super horny for them horny boys.
Aw, yeah. On the subject of horniness, actually, I'm going to destroy that thing I just said. It's time to take a break.
Yeah. Wait a minute. Are you suggesting this is a weird episode? Let's go take a break. I'm actually just, like, sourcing Twitter stuff right now. And so I was looking at cursedimages.jpg. You know what cursed images is?
I'm aware of images that are cursed, but I don't know if it's an actual... I don't know about the actual thing in which they are sourced.
Cursed, it's at cursedimages_2. And they're just a bunch of pictures... mostly involving weed, that they dub cursed images, and they just like, and every picture is cursed image, and then it has like a number.
Oh,
on it.
Shit.
They're freaky and weird and cool and weird and weird and weird. Like I'm looking at one right now where somebody has shrimp heads on his fingers.
Oh, Christ.
One with an Asian man in a mermaid suit.
Oh my god, there's a statue that is basically Saturn devouring his son, but it's a giant Easter bunny.
Giant Easter bunny. I saw that one. One with a cat that's sitting on a dildo, so it makes it look like he has a dick. I mean, the cat might actually have a dick, but it makes it look like he has a human penis.
Oh god, there's a pie that's a face and it's bad.
Oh, well, this is the one I stopped on. It's from 3rd of December 2017. Cursed image 4344. We should probably link it because it is pretty epic. But I'm gonna put it to you. I'm gonna put it in the chat right now.
I'm not enjoying scrolling through this. Oh god.
Cuz okay. It's real epic. Do you see it?
I'm pulling it up now.
Is that unsettling? Okay, so this is an audio media, so the thing that we're looking at right now is the dismembered limbs and head of a baby doll attached to multiple tires.
So basically
this person did not just take one tire, they took multiple tires, put detached limbs of baby dolls and pasted it to make the tire look like their body. It's fucking weird.
Okay, so they said Infinity Wars was the most ambitious crossover of all time, but this mix between Rubber and Baby Driver is amazing.
That was a good goof. I like that. But, I mean, how many tires is that?
13 unlucky
13 tires
cursed
like that is definitely cursed. who does that? Like, I guess if you're bored at the tire store,
but none of them look like dolls? New tires. They all look like used tires.
Do you think the person who did this bought those tires for this purpose?
Someone has way too much money.
That's weird.
Oh, God.
The one with the raw turkey that's also a cake. Like it looks like a raw turkey, but it is a cake.
I hate this so much. Oh, my God.
It's a very good one. I like it. On our show notes page, we had a thing for what was it?
Oh!
What did we call it? Favorite meme distributors. Yeah, there's a lot of ass play in cursed images as well.
Oh!
We're talking about that.
Oh!
Yeah.
I'm looking at like rolls that have like some sort of filling, but it looks like they have like yeah. bugged out eyes and they're drooling yes. goo, and I'm just.
Yeah, I'm looking at one with a person in a panda costume that is milking a goat.
I just saw that one. Oh God,
okay. The one under it with the carrots.
The carrots in the washer.
In the dishwasher.
Oh God,
what is going? Okay, oh there you go. The sexy Slimer.
Oh my
First
God.
First image 2368. Somebody in a Slimer costume that has stockings on and high heels.
Okay, listeners, let me paint you a very spooky word picture. So imagine you are at a Halloween party, okay? And the hosts have gone out of their way to make some delightful horse divorces, some real good hors d'oeuvres, and they've created a head, the Hellraiser head, out of not proper Little Smokies, but cut up hot dogs.
Yeah, that's what it looks like.
That looks slightly overcooked. Their casings are definitely compromised, adding yep. to the wrinkled features of Hellraiser. And
his telltale wrinkled features. Yes.
His classic wrinkle boy. Yeah. And obviously the hors d'oeuvre selection spikes, otherwise known as toothpicks, are representing the Hellraiser spikes coming out of his head. His eyes are olives with pimento and what looks like Baby Bell cheese wheels.
Yep.
And his like. Teeth are just probably human teeth.
judging from this site, I cannot confirm nor deny they are human teeth. That's a good one too. The one underneath is really good too.
Fucking
okay. We spent a lot of time on cursed images.
Let's cancel this podcast. We're done, so, folks.
So in addition to the two headlines that we had, the two headlines account we had up,
mm-hmm.
I also put up a tab for a shitpost 5000,
oh.
which is a shitpost bot, and then what's poppin' Jimbo and John Hendren at Fart.
Oh hell yeah!
So two headlines is I just sent you the one before we came back from break, the new one.
Oh,
came
word.
Out 13 minutes ago. Two headlines is exactly what you'd think it would be. They just merged two headlines together. And the newest one right now is John McCain does not want Lebanon to attend his funeral.
That's getting a good retweet from me. At it's Dylan Bickers.
It's pretty
endorsed.
Good. It's pretty good. The one below that, May the 4th be with you. 5 reasons why Carnival Cruise Line is the perfect person to play Lando in Star Wars.
I'm tweeting them
there's
now.
There's been some good ones that we went through together before we started recording. Pokemon designers come clean. Admit Israel is a squirrel. 5 dead in explosion in Prince Harry. Is there anything else that I favorited from these? 2018 Tiger Woods in literature is a casualty of a sex abuse scandal. Kylie Jenner MSFT gets into the Linux business.
Oh, God.
This is, yep, too much.
All right, I just tweeted at Two Headlines with a link to our iTunes page and said that we are featuring you guys on our podcast. Check us out.
Nice. Starbucks COO on LeBron James arrest and youth outreach. Very good.
If Two Headlines wants to be a sponsor for Dubai Friday for every other Wednesday.
Oh, there we go. Here we go. It's a God of War Two Headlines from May 3rd. God of War learned their lesson. Rebound with Game 5 win over Wizards. Rudy Giuliani results get boost from in-game spending.
Dig dug, dig dug, dig dug. Let's talk about Rudy Giuliani for a second.
Oh, yeah.
So, Rudy Giuliani...
So, the question is, do the bad guys know they can talk to each other? Like, seriously, dude. You didn't have to say those things.
So, Rudy Giuliani went on TV, I think, with...
On Hannity,
and talked about, basically confirmed the fact that Donald Trump used money to pay off Stormy Daniels about the affair they had. The affair.
The one time she allowed him to have sex with her.
Yeah, and I shared on my personal Facebook account, I shared this story and was very adamant about it. And
I did see that.
A heavy sigh friend, a stroke friend, is
are you okay, Dylan? You're stroking out. What's happening?
God. So he
oh no, don't stroke out. Don't pretend like you're stroking out. You might look presidential.
Oh God.
What even damn, we are dunking on the president in this episode.
Boom. This is going to get me re-unfollowed.
re-blocked
on Twitter.
Re-blocked by today, Mr. Donald Trump.
Today, which is the 6th of May. It's May,
the year,
right?
Of our Lord.
Yeah, the year of our Lord, 2018. I got unblocked by Donald J. Trump on Twitter, which is, or at Real Donald Trump, named Donald J. Trump on Twitter, right. Which, yeah. So I shared this story, and I had one friend from the Air Force who got out commenting, asking why it was a big deal that the president lied to the press and to the American people and to investigators about having an affair and paying off a porn star.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to go into the minutiae of the conversation, but it was exactly what you'd expect from your average Trump supporter. A lot of redirection, a lot of excuses, a lot of "but Hillary."
He didn't say that, "but Hillary." That mm-hmm. was just a joke.
There is a meme that I loved from election 2016 before our fate was decided. And
our fate was decided.
It's a stick of butter. And the caption is, "butter emails."
Yeah. I mean, it would be funny if it wasn't happening to us.
Yep.
All the days, every day.
Rip.
Rip. So when you had gotten on, I saw this tweet that harkens to episode 2 where you let me have fun with wrestling for a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's a wrestling meme that says someday Brock, picture of a book, and it's in the cover. It says someday Brock Lesnar won't be a universal champion, and other hilarious jokes you can tell yourself. Volume 2, which is a very, very good one. The Wrestling Outsider is, where that was from.
Very nice.
He makes wrestling memes, I guess. So I'm going to follow that because I am a nerd.
Hell yeah.
So I have some other ones. I don't know if you have any other ones. I have other ones. So the shitpost bot 5000.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna link you up, bro.
Nice. Right. Squad.
Squad. Link coming your way.
Squad.
Oh, okay. I thought we were gonna do a munch. I want a munch. Squad. So shitpost bot 5000 takes two memes. Two random memes and puts them together. And it's very good. Memes are mostly visual media, though. So, like, here's one. When your stepdad takes the last Mountain Dew, and it's the picture of Donald Trump eating Taco Bell at Trump Tower.
All right, let me paint the listeners another word picture. It's a play off the classic meme in which there's a message conversation between a patron and Little Caesar's Pizza. The original being, "Hello, I bought a pizza today, and I've got a complaint." Little Caesar's replies, "Hello, please describe the problem," and he sends a picture of a really fucked up pizza, to which Little Caesar's replies, "What the fuck?" The new meme is, "Hello, I've bought a meme today. I've got a complaint. Hello, please describe the problem." And it's just a picture of Kel'Thuzad from Warcraft 3, like, rubbing his chin. What the fuck? we'll include it in the show notes. I'll definitely include this in the show notes.
When you slowly start hating someone you were friends with, the picture is Osmosis Jones making the biggest shit-eating grin, and then underneath says, "I don't know why this is so accurate, but it is." here's one. This was posted 7 hours ago. The caption is, "A weapon to surpass Metal Gear," and the photo is Shrek looking angry.
Nice.
Metal Gear. I am a weapon. I am much weapon. Everyone has a soul meme. I feel like this meme was made for me. This is the happiest I've ever been in my life. Have you found yours? A picture of a woman hugging the meme. I'm dead inside, and it's glorious.
Oh my god. Hell yes.
It's good. This is a good page.
This is good.
They insist that this is a bot account. I am not convinced. But they do have a site of their own called shitpostbot.com. and you can subscribe to it for galleries and pictures and templates and source images and, like, I mean, maybe it is. I don't know. But some of them are just too on point that it's like, how did that happen?
Mm-hmm.
And they post like every 30 minutes, so.
It's probably a bot.
So it has to be a bot, I guess.
Yee.
Then I have Bill Ratchet was popping Jimbo on Twitter. And he's just real funny. Crazy how 420 this year is on 420.
Oh my god.
Are we allowed to tweet self-deprecating shit on Twitter yet? I've been hiding in the shadows. I'm about to get Cinco de high as fuck. It's crazy how Cinco de Mayo is on 420 this year. That's pretty good. Oh, hey, here's one. May 4th. Might fuck around and record a podcast tonight.
Nice. Oh, I'm gonna try and go through, because most of the memes I get, sadly, are from Facebook on meme pages. And so, let's see here. What are some of the class ones?
Facebook just has lower quality memes.
We have implying video games are fun. Let's see here. Oh, God. A lot of these have to do with JSA. That's weird. Okay. God, they got it all mixed up. Cigarettes in unusual places. Ow, my bones hurt a lot. Ooh, ow, my bones. Tiny Snack Comics, which is actually run by Alex Cohen, who I met through one of the mean groups I am in, Rage Aesthetics, and they're real good. And actually, most of the memes I get are from groups I belong to, like Twin Peaks Log Posting and Stardew Memes for Crop Raising Teens and The Shocking Truth of Donut Earth and Lengthy Earth, a Long Earth Discussion Group, in which every N is replaced with the letter M because M is longer.
I mean, you gotta have them long boys.
And finally, last but not least, New Urbanist Memes for Transit-Oriented Teens.
Okay.
Where people pretty much shit on brutalism all the time, and it's a real good time. Oh, God.
What was the other ones I was looking at? Man, so many memes. There are so many memes online.
It is the only use for online is the memes.
This is truly the greatest timeline because we can revel in all of these memes.
We also have the classic and much beloved I don't like anything, I don't go outside, co-owned by depression memes. So good.
There is actually a rap album called I Don't Like Shit, I Don't Go Outside. I don't know if that has anything to do with that, but
it could.
A man that goes by the name Earl Sweatshirt, and he is a famous rap man.
Oh, maybe you can tell me. What was the name of the guy with the hefty boy with the mustache at the presidential debate in the red sweater? Mm. He was bald.
Kevin, right?
Kevin from whatchamacallit? The Office? No. Oh, what's his name?
No, that's Dan. That sucks. And he was found out to be like a real shithead.
Yeah, he referred to women who were pregnant as beautiful human submarines.
Which is just a good meme, guys. Okay, you can't call women who are pregnant beautiful human submarines.
Kenbo!
I just don't fuck with you. Did you just type beautiful human submarines into Google?
I did.
Amazing. That is also an alternate title for this episode.
Let's not go with that.
Beautiful human submarines. Oh, here is a meme before I discovered Twitter.
Nice.
Courtesy of our friends at the late G4.
Oh, rip.
I heard about this one on Attack of the Show. It's called David Tennant in Places He Shouldn't Be.
Nice.
.tumblr.com. And it's just basically GIFs and pictures of David Tennant, who is, it looks like he's hailing a cab. I think it's from a scene somewhere in Doctor Who. But it's a cutout image of him placed over all of these images.
And
it's very good. It is very good.
Aww.
And they've been active since, like, forever. So
wholesome.
Let's look at the archive by month. By 2011. October 2011. Boom. First post. Snape. 500 miles. Weird. What? I don't know what this has to do with this. Maybe this Tumblr page has been rebranded. Weird.
It's very possible.
Very, very possible.
So back as far as 2012, they have them.
A lot. There's a lot of them. David Tennant in an LMFAO video. 2011.
They have
party rack in the house tonight is the name of the picture. That's very good. Are we making this segment a little too tired?
Yeah, I think the point where we were scrolling through the years of Tumblr and pictures of David
and
Tennant in PlayStation
2011.
I think we worn out the meme segment.
So Dylan was having some technical issues there, so I'm gonna restart this segment. I was just gonna give a little recognition to Childish Gambino, Donald Glover. He hosted SNL last night and was the musical guest on SNL last night. I've been following his career for about 10-ish years now, ever since the Derek comedy days, where he was like 22 and making comedy with his friends. Mm-hmm. So big ups to that guy, because he's like really creative and like he killed it on SNL last night, and he just came out with new music and he won his Grammy last year, and like he's just making moves, man. He's rich now.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah his opening joke on his monologue was you know, like, when I was here before in New York, I was poor. And coming back, and now I'm rich. Coming back, I think it's better to be rich in New York, guys. It definitely feels a lot better.
God, you can only imagine.
You can only imagine. So it's that one, and then I was also going to mention Wyatt Cenac's new show, Problem Areas, which is a show that's on HBO. And I wanted to, this is the real important, maybe the only 10 minutes that's going to be actually be important of this entire podcast.
Nice.
Which, I mean, awesome. We went from making super heavy podcasts to making super light podcasts, very, very fast. So Wyatt Cenac's Problem Areas is mostly about, policing. Mm-hmm. So Wyatt Cenac, for people who don't know, is another satirist from The Daily Show. If you have listened to the past few episodes, it might seem like I stand for The Daily Show, and that's true. Like, Jon Stewart era Daily Show is like the reason why I like comedy and politics.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I just like am really in tuned with whoever becomes a correspondent on that show, automatically shows up on my radar. So I mean, I love Samantha Bee has her own show. Jordan Klepper has his own show. John Oliver has his own show, obviously. Then we talked about Roy Wood Jr. 2 weeks ago, or 4 weeks ago, I guess, every other Wednesday.
Yeah.
Wyatt Cenac was the senior black correspondent before Roy Wood Jr. was in the Jon Stewart era. I actually read oral history of The Daily Show, which is a book of like interviews with people who worked on the show. And there, this is a side note, there is a pretty infamous gaffe where in kind of a fight where Jon Stewart did an impression of Michael Steele, who was RNC chairman at that point, and Wyatt Cenac thought that his impression was racially insensitive, and so that kind of like drove a wedge between the two, but they ended up doing more of the types type of segments that he wanted to do, which was on discrimination and racial sensitivity in the country and stuff like that. So kind of helped them creatively, even though they did end up separating at the end. Wyatt Cenac left the show before Jon Stewart did. I mean, he still made it to the last episode, but he still was invited and went to the last episode is what I meant.
Yeah.
But, you know, nothing really. He still has that sense of John was in the wrong.
Yeah.
But apart from that, Wyatt Cenac has been working, which is funny because he's going to wind up on the same network as Jon Stewart's going to be, because mm-hmm. Jon Stewart has a new show that he's going to put on HBO as well.
Hell yeah.
But so Wyatt Cenac and John Oliver are both on HBO now. And this new show, Problem Areas, is him basically, most of the show is about policing. Some of the show is about current events, but he is doing like this amazing thing where 3/4 of the show is dedicated to policing every week, mm-hmm. and figuring out where we're going wrong with policing,
mm-hmm.
and how communities can get involved with their police force, and how the police are actually trained to do their jobs, and if that training's sufficient, if the circumstances that lead to shootings can be mitigated in some way.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a mindset that some of these more inexperienced police officers have before they come in and deal with a difficult situation? Stuff like that. So this last third episode Problem Areas was really awesome, because he went to this small town in Illinois, which had a really great community policing program. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you're familiar with community policing, but it's a term in which the police department itself installs a police officer in the community.
Mm-hmm.
They're tasked with building trust and a relationship with the people around them, and to kind of community organize as much as they are enforcing the law. So it's a very interesting dynamic, because mm-hmm. you have some people saying, hey, I don't want a police officer in my neighborhood. It feels like they're just surveilling me.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's a very uncomfortable environment to be in. And then you have other people that are like, there's a police officer in my environment. That police officer is going to keep me safe. Mm-hmm. If I have a problem, I know where to go to, who to call,
mm-hmm.
stuff like that. And so it was really nice because they had this segment, and it was a good 3/4 of the 3/4 of the policing segment. So they're talking about community policing,
mm-hmm.
and what are the goals, and do they actually achieve the goals? Which, it's like how do you kind of measure that? I mean, their measurement at that point was how many people have died in a police shooting in our community,
mm-hmm.
and I think they went through like a record 5 or 6 years without a civilian being shot by the police,
mm-hmm.
Which is like amazing in America.
Yeah,
that shit happens all the time here. But that's why Wyatt and his people went there. But when they left March of this year, they shot somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And the circumstances around that shooting are interesting as well. Because we have body cameras, we have evidence, we know exactly what went wrong,
mm-hmm.
and it's all public.
Yeah.
We know exactly. So the situation is that there's this black woman was pulled over for driving erratically, and they see that she has a knife,
mm-hmm.
They call out to her, ask her to hand the knife over, put the knife down.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't do that. She doesn't get out of her car. And then all of a sudden they see that she set a fire in her car.
Mm.
So what they're doing is, they try to get try to get this person out of harm's way, but also she has a knife.
Mm-hmm.
So they keep on asking her to unlock the doors and to put down the knife. And then, while this is happening, they are talking about non-lethal ways to handle the situation. Let's use the pepper spray. Let's use the rubber bullets.
Can I just ask real quick?
Yeah.
What was the woman's skin color?
She was black.
Yeah. Okay.
And So, and they go through, and it looks professional. It looks, you know, they talk about non-lethal ways to handle the situation,
mm-hmm.
and then they say, you know, they say that they're going to enforce that.
Yeah. Right?
But then all of a sudden, the fire gets too much. Mm-hmm. She opens her car door, and then she runs out with her knife, mm-hmm. and she's shot to death.
Which to me makes sense.
Right.
It's horrible, but like that.
Right. And so there's a whole thing about is there something that could have been done earlier on,
mm-hmm.
in which they could have de-escalated the situation and saved that woman's life.
Yeah.
She's obviously mentally unstable,
mm-hmm.
And was an aggressor.
Mm-hmm.
But there is also a weird subdivision of, hey, this police force is above violence, mm-hmm. above lethal force.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, and so they do cover the aftermath of the shooting, and they say, you know, they the police sergeant says straight out, you know, if you're gonna come at me with a close combat weapon, you're gonna get shot.
Yeah.
And so that's the way we end the episode, is that, you know, is community policing helping,
mm-hmm.
And is there any way they could have solved that without the death of a woman?
Yeah.
And it, you know, because obviously it turns into a criminal act because she was trying to stab the police officer.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not like, oh no, this woman was innocent.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that, but it's also, there are enough, you know, it gets to a point where the community hears enough about gun violence and enough about people dying, and
yeah.
they just want to know where we are in 2018 and how we can get better at stopping that.
Yeah. And
that person died because she was mentally unstable.
Yeah.
Like, how can we fix that? Mm-hmm. How can that be addressed?
And that's not a problem that's going to get fixed by, you know, gun rights advocates.
Right.
But there's a headline that broke today in the Washington Post that your story reminded me of, and it's headline: an off-duty police officer thought a man stole Mentos, so he drew his gun. For a moment after the off-duty officer produced his pistol, Jose Areola, that's a weird last name. Sorry, mister.
Yeah, sure. Stop being horny.
I'm sorry. Considered how he might die over a $1.19 pack of Mentos. Areola had already paid for the mints in an Orange County gas station March 16th and slid them into his pocket. The officer behind him, clad in black shorts and a sweatshirt, appears to think he sees a crime in progress.
Right.
The officer reaches for a semi-automatic pistol and in a quick action pulls back the pistol slide to chamber a round, the video shows. Give that back, police officer. That's a weird quote. He tells a, give that back, .. police officer. He tells a stunned Areola. So basically, dude thinks he sees a guy jacking a pack of Mentos and
right.
thinks that's a good reason to pull out his gun.
That's a good reason to pull out your gun.
And this makes me wonder, it's something I need to get better educated on, but it's like, is there a standardized education system for police officers nationwide? Do different jurisdictions, different counties, different states have different training regimens for what
right.
is okay? Was he undertrained? Was he not trained at all? Because some
right.
officers that are walking around with guns and badges don't have any formal training yet.
Right.
They're still in the training process, but the people are so undermanned that they are putting them out on the street, which
right.
is fucking ridiculous, but that's Just, yeah, I went to...
That's another thing that Snack Show hits on in an earlier episode is training. Mm-hmm. And they say, they point out that there is no federal... I mean, there are federal guidelines of what a police force is, but, you know, it's up to the states to enforce the laws and to train the police, which is in a standard... It's just a little crazy to mm-hmm. think that, you know, this department has, this department here over here in Michigan has a different standard of when to use or bear a weapon to this other jurisdiction. Mm-hmm. Like, and, you know, people die because of that. People get hurt because of that. Like, and where you draw the line, I mean, there are, at the capital society that we live in, there's also training programs for police officers in which states give money to these training programs
mm-hmm.
In order to train their officers through web videos and conferences.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. So, no on hand, you know, like no on the ground training of any kind, except the required training from their department, physical training and such like that.
Fun fact,
training and stuff like that.
Something I want to kind of jump in on this is the military does that a lot too. At least the Air Force.
Yeah.
So a lot of checks out. A lot of pre-deployment training, a lot of our annual training that we need to do is in the form of CBTs, computer-based training, in right. which you watch essentially an online slideshow about what you're supposed to be training on, whether it's the law of armed conflict or
right.
CBRN, the chemical, biological, radiological, nuclear, and high explosive training. Yeah. Like, a lot of this training is basically just a slideshow that most people... just click through to check a box. They just
right
tap 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 tap, guess and check on the quiz at the end, because you get unlimited tries and then you got that nice cert. So it's ridiculous. But
right. I did want to bring up there is a more famous training contractor out there for police forces called Killology.
Oh god.
In which I forgot his name, but he addresses the community basically as a insurgent, as an enemy.
Ugh.
And tells police officers that they need to have the mindset that they are in a war zone and that anything can happen at any time, which is not a mindset that you want a police officer to have.
No.
If you're trying to get him to community organize, build up trust with the community.
Mm-hmm.
Because if he sees them as the other, he's not going to help them.
No.
And, you know, as soon as he sees them go reach for something, he's going to pull out his gun.
Yep.
So it just stunned me that there is someone out there that is feeding the police departments this, hey, we need to kill more bad guys, so you need to figure out how to do that.
Ugh.
You need to round more bodies up.
Big oof.
Like, that's like... yeah, so there are some problems with problem areas.
Mm-hmm.
I did not mean for that to be a pun. He does get preachy at some points,
mm-hmm.
which brings me to... he basically says whatever's on his mind, which is completely, it's something I haven't seen on television in a while.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's going back to the John Stewart type of teaching people, but with not with the emotional individual separation,
mm-hmm.
emotional separation from the issue, actually injecting your personal life experience into what's being taught.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, John Stewart really didn't do that with life experience, but he did do that with his opinions. So Whitesnake kind of takes that from John Stewart and rolls with it. And it does get preachy at points. So I can feel how people didn't really like the John Stewart era of The Daily Show.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's exactly what he did. But, you know, maybe it's just me growing as a person. I was a kid when I was watching that.
Yeah.
I didn't really understand. This is a person that is trying to get me to understand, appreciate, and internalize a certain viewpoint.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right or wrong for the media to do? Is definitely a question that should be debated, because, you know, you see it on the other side as well. Conservatives have that.
They got
that
shit
game
on lock.
And is that acceptable for them to do, or is that only acceptable for liberals to do and not conservatives? Because it blurs the line between being a commentator and being a, injecting your views into somebody or giving your views to somebody else and trying to get them to, absorb whatever viewpoint you have.
I think we're running a little long on this topic. I think we're running a little long on this show, actually. But
yeah,
I do want to point.
You wanted a short one this week, but I had to do it to him.
I had to do it to him. But I do want to point out something on that. It is an interesting question, but, and I know I'm gonna probably get backlash for this, but HBO. You have to pay for HBO, right? If you're watching Comedy Central, you have that little lower third off to the side that has the Comedy Central watermark.
Right.
You expect jokes, you expect opinion.
Right.
Neither of those has a watermark or a lower third for an official news network, not pointing fingers at anything that may be a small quadrupedal bushy-tailed mammal channel news
owned by Australian man.
Yeah, an Australian rich man who also owns other media conglomerates. You don't see the a lot of the liberal opinion based things with a lower third featuring a news network, unless you're on MSNBC, in which they prominently display what's opinion and what's reporting.
Right.
But yeah.
Editorials.
So I think we got our good dose of the real shit.
Yeah. And hopefully the people got their good dose of every other Wednesday.
Oh, hell yeah. It's...
Are we transitioning to plugs?
I think we are. I got one. Because we have new artwork for every other Wednesday, which was big shout out to Nick from Anchor Design. We'll have a link to their stuff in the show notes. They did a fantastic job of taking my scribble design for every other Wednesday and making it into something that actually looks professional. And super, super attentive to customer needs and requests and little changes that I wanted to make. And cannot recommend Anchor Design enough. So check out their shit if you want to start a podcast of your own, or if you want to do some shit for, like, a website you're making, or really anything, like a birthday card, I don't give a shit. Whatever you want, check out their shit.
That's real good, because when we were talking about making this podcast, we were talking about building it up with art from independent artists. Mm-hmm. And so we have Anchor Designs now, which is excellent. Like, that was a surprise to me. I didn't know you were doing that, Dylan, but...
I do
it getting art.
I do things without clearing it through Devin all the time, and I have this thought, like, maybe I should tell him, and I'm like, no, it'll be a good surprise.
I mean, it was a good surprise. I like the logo better than the other logo.
Me too.
Even though the other logo was it did try.
Yeah, it did.
You had a try. It was good. And then I like the E. I still have the E on my Twitter bio, so that's good too. Along with that, shout out to Villainous Beats, our Intro and outro music is off Lo-Fi Depression by Villainous Beats. Go check out his SoundCloud. He's going to have new projects up shortly.
So, it's all good. And something I've actually taken to doing is listening to Villainous's stuff while I'm like trying to do editing or do homework or something like that, because lo-fi is great for like focus work, and his stuff is brilliant. So please check him out.
Yeah, he's super nice, and the man is awesome. Mm-hmm. Any other plugs besides our own stuff? You can check me out at devineva.com. Mm-hmm. And as always, Dylan is at masthead.tech.
Yep, masthead.tech. You can check out the podcast specifically at masthead.tech/every other Wednesday, every-other-Wednesday, I should specify. We're on iTunes. We're on Google Music Play now.
Nice. Facebook?
Facebook, obviously. We are... every other Wednesday on Facebook. I'm really surprised we're the first ones to grab that, but nailed it.
We should have gotten a new subscriber yesterday, because I told Jeff about it, and he was like, "Yeah, okay."
Hell yeah!
So he subscribed on his podcast, his favorite podcast platform, his favorite podcast aggregator. We definitely should get a sponsor for that.
Oh, absolutely!
Looking for sponsors for that. Anybody who is a representative of one of those.
At Marco also, Arment, hit us up with that sweet Overcast money, because I love your products a lot, and if you use Overcast, you get to see the chapter breakdown for our podcast.
There you go. Yeah, sometimes the chapter breakdown works on things and sometimes it doesn't. And it's really cool when it does, because you can be like, oh, they're talking about this, I can click on it, and it's nice. So also Twitter, our Twitter handles. I'm at devineva,
and I'm at Dylan Bickers, all one word.
All right. Do we have anything else for our lovely audience?
Nah, I think it's time to hit that good stolen ending.
Stolen ending. If you guys haven't picked up on this, this is the last bit where we take an ending from a show that we like, and I've chosen like all of these. So Dylan, you're gonna have to choose some of these at some point.
I did the first one.
I mean that was one we both liked. But for the Spoon Man Mike Mitchell, I'm Nick Weiger. Happy eating.
See ya.